Hey, Token CEO listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
This is the Token CEO podcast. It's Thursday, August 19th. This is episode 177. So we are presented, as always, by Sports Research. I'm shoveling food in my face as I'm reading this because it's like 5 o'clock and I haven't eaten lunch yet. But if you have a better handle on your day, you want to look great, you know Labor Day is coming, and you're like, hey, I'm going to look my best for the last inches of summer. Sports Research is the brand and the platform for you. They've got collagen, they have vitamins, they've got waist trimmers, they've got Sweet Sweat, which helps you sweat and perfect your body. They've got everything you could possibly need to look and feel your best and to enhance your workout routine. Go to sportsresearch.com, use code Erica for 25% off at checkout. That's sportsresearch.com. Code Erica for 25% off at checkout. All right, here's what we're doing today. We are doing four things. We are talking about headlines. We have a Q&A on mental health. I'm not sure I'm equipped to answer much of that, but we will do our best. We're going to do adulting as we always do. And then we will have Chaps on. Chaps has got a bunch of stuff going on in his personal and family life. He talked about it on Podfathers this week, but we're going to get his perspective. And that's what we're going to do in today's episode. Okay, first headline is the NASDAQ diversity rules. So late last week, the SEC has approved the NASDAQ's new diversity rule. That rule is aimed at upping the number of directors who are women, who are people of color, and who are members of the LGBTQ plus community. It was actually interesting that it was buried on page 40 of the rule book. And the footnote in the document is going to have a dramatic effect about how VCs think about their own role in board seat selection. So the net-net on this one is that if you want to go public on the NASDAQ stock exchange, you need to have some diversity. You've got to have some women on there. You've got to have some people of color, and you've got to start considering and including members of the LGBTQ plus community. So our board is full of white men. Most company boards are also full of white men. I know I sit on two boards, almost three boards. Those are majority white men, but there is such a massive, massive effort to have more women represented, have more diversity represented, have more inclusion at a board level. I think this is really important because it just broadens perspective. It gives you new ways of thinking. It gives you people with networks that before would never have been tapped into. So I think this is a great thing. When you look at startups and when you look at venture capital, so venture capital companies are the companies that grow, like Barstool Sports, then ultimately some subset of those companies go public. Venture capital employees are overwhelmingly male, they're overwhelmingly white, and they are overwhelmingly grads of Harvard or Stanford. And in general, as Joanna Griffiths, the CEO of Nix, reminded us, they tend to invest in startups that match that exact image. I had an interesting conversation this week. I met with a Stanford Business School. What would you call it? I met with a guy who goes to Stanford Business School. He works for a VC, and he credit to him was like, hey, I want to come in. I want to learn more about you. I want to learn more about Barstool. How is it that you guys do what you do? He sat in the lobby and his first comment to me was how weird Barstool was and how diverse it was, which I had a big laugh at because everyone, obviously, I do think people know that we're weird, but diverse is not a line that people would say within 5 minutes of meeting us. What's so interesting, though, is that's exactly what you would say from 5 minutes of sitting in our lobby. So I was psyched to hear that. But the second piece is he was asking me, hey, how do we get a better feel for consumer companies? How do we start to see things that we otherwise haven't or couldn't? And my point was like, stop getting a bunch of white guys who go to Stanford to do all the searching for you, right? If you only have guys with vests and blue button-down shirts doing all your work, you're only going to find things that guys with vests and blue button-down shirts like. So I think it's a great call by the NASDAQ. I think more people from more places doing more things is better for everybody. And it's great to see that that will apply to public company stewardship as well. All right, our next headline is, should work from home work for less? So this is interesting, actually. I saw that Rachel had put a tweet out on Token about this week. So one of the interesting things that's happening is that Google employees based in the same office before the pandemic could see changes in pay if they switched to working from home permanently. So what this means is that if you go into work, you're paid one thing. And if you decide to stay at home, you get paid another. Facebook and Twitter have also cut pay for remote employees who move to less expensive areas. Smaller companies like Reddit and Zillow have shifted to location agnostic pay models. So that means they'll pay you the same. It doesn't matter where you work. I think the big thing here is that we are in an employee-driven economy. If you look at the only thing that could topple Amazon, Facebook, Google, Apple, the FANG companies essentially, it's their fucking employees. It's also getting harder than ever and more competitive than ever to retain employees. I deal with this every day. Somebody's poaching someone from Barstool Sports. I agree that, you know, when I used to hire people, if they lived in Boston or New York or Chicago or San Francisco or Los Angeles, they would cite the cost of living as a rationale for why they should be paid more, especially versus an employee who lived in an area with lower cost of living. I mean, at Barstool, we don't pay you more by virtue of where you work. We invest in our employees for what they do for Barstool Sports and what they can contribute and who they can be here and how they can grow the company, less so based on where someone works. I understand this from a company perspective. I think for a long time, employees have advocated for pay increases by virtue of cost of living increases. I could see it both ways, though, which is essentially, hey, the job is the job. This job commands X type of salary, regardless if you're smart and live someplace rural, or you're dumb and you live someplace expensive, or vice versa. So interesting development. I don't know how well this is going to go. I think the reason that you're seeing companies like Zillow and Reddit have location agnostic pay is that they're having to fight harder to find employees. And I think the other thing you're seeing from Google, Facebook, and others is one, they're having retention problems because they're employing picked off. And two, their employees are very empowered and they're not going to stand for things like this. Okay, this is a great one. Last week, Bama Rush video flooded TikTok. This delighted some, annoyed others. The chicks in the office, girls, I'm sure, were eating this right up. But essentially what happened is videos about sorority recruitment at the University of Alabama were all over TikTok. They featured women in the middle of their rush process, documenting their outfit, documenting their day-to-day activities, essentially chronicling the entire rush experience. This is like Legally Blonde, but the TikTok reality modern day version. TikTok, because they're smart, the algorithm turned the videos into a phenomenon. It inspired parodies. It created fandom. The hashtag Bama Rush has over 270 million views. And what's transfixing about it all is that they are immersing people in an experience. So in the olden days, you could have had a show on Bravo about the University of Alabama rush season. In modern days, it's crowdsourced, it's organic, it's amplified by an algorithm. And what makes it truly explosive is not just the thing itself, but the reaction to the thing. And essentially what it is it's watching a real life reality show in real time. So I love this. I think this trend is going to continue. You question why television is dying and why nobody cares about established media or entertainment brands. This is exactly why. So for anybody who manages anybody else or anyone who works at a company, I would say that they would agree with me that mental health is one of the biggest workplace issues. Employee health is becoming a top concern for companies as they try to hang on to workers through the pandemic. As we talked about with location-based pay, companies are desperate to keep people. And what's happening is that there is a huge amount of fatigue. There is a huge amount of job dissatisfaction. Depression is off the chart. Anxiety is through the roof. People can say that they're used to pandemic era living and working. The reality, though, is that I think most everyone is burnt out. So year over year, when you look at employee fatigue on the job, which is something that a firm called Robert Half measures, workplace fatigue is up 10% year over year, which is pretty staggering. So in 2021, 44% of workers say they feel fatigued on the job, up from 34% in 2020. I don't blame them. Sitting on Zoom calls all day is fucking fatiguing. I also think that not working at work creates a sense of dissociation. I think it adds to anxiety. It creates a paranoia about what you're doing versus what everyone else is doing. And companies are having to get smart and also to realize that the mental health benefits that they give to employees are a meaningful part of that employee's retention. I was at a board meeting 3 weeks ago, maybe at this point, and we were talking about what does it take to retain front of business, or what does it take to retain front of house employees? And the things that employees value, it's not just pay, it's not benefits, it's not necessarily even just the salary itself. It's mental health benefits, it's flexibility, it's days off, it's a schedule that accommodates their life, not just accommodates what's needed at work. At Barstool, we're trying to be all over this. Our people talk about mental health all the time. I actually think that's one of the more interesting parts of the Barstool reality show. And we'll obviously get into this in our interview with Chaps later, but how people feel about where they work, what they're doing, and what's happening in their personal lives is impossible to keep bottled up and contained. I think the younger the employee, the more on their sleeve they wear their feelings, both about work as well as what's happening at home. We're working with companies like BetterHelp to provide therapy. BetterHelp is one of the largest online counseling programs worldwide. They're a big partner for Barstool Sports. It's encouraging people to have a low friction way to connect with a therapist and to be able to help give, to be able to give them the tools to manage their mental health, knowing that mental health is one part driven by work and another part driven by life. Speaking of things that stress you out, mortgages are very stressful. We love Cross Country Mortgage. If you're paying attention to anything about the housing market right now, you will know that rates for mortgages are unbelievably low and that you, as a very smart person, because you listen to this podcast, should not pay the bank any more. You should not pay them a cent more than you need to. What's great about Cross Country Mortgage is that they make it incredibly simple to figure out how much you can save on a monthly basis and over the life of your loan. So if you're a new homeowner, let's say you just bought a house, you decided to move out of the city, you're living your dream in the country, you're in the suburbs, you just got a new apartment, whatever it may be. If you're a new homeowner and you haven't refinanced yet, you may be leaving thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars on the table. If you call Cross Country Mortgage today, they'll give you a fast free quote, and they'll also give you a free home valuation. Go to crosscountrymortgage.com/barstool to learn more about your future home buying experience or to refinance your current mortgage. Cross Country Mortgage LLC, NMLS 3029. All loans subject to underwriting approval, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org. We're transitioning. Those are our headlines. We talked about Bama Rush. We talked about NASDAQ requiring diversity in their public boards. And then we also talked about location-based pay and if the employees of Google, Facebook, and other predominantly San Francisco-based tech companies are going to stand for it. Now we're going to transition into talking about mental health. We're having a mental health type episode. These questions are from our Facebook group. If you haven't already, join the Token CEO Facebook group. It's an awesome group of people. There's so much sharing that's happening there. There's so many jobs that people are getting from the Token CEO Facebook group. It's actually staggering to me. I love it. But here's their questions on mental health. First question, how do you best take or ask for a mental health day? Do I use PTO, which is paid time off, or sick time? Also, do you have any advice for how employers can standardize mental health days? From my perspective, it seems like honestly communicating a mental health day can vary largely based on your relationship with your manager. Do you have any thoughts? This is very much a question that would come from our Facebook group because it's like half a statement. It's got a lot of detail. It's like me, it's running on incessantly. Here's my take on a mental health day. If you need a day off for your mental health, it's nobody's fucking business but yours as to why you need a day off. So if you need a day off because you've let your laundry pile up for 2 months and you got to do it, or you need a day off because you need to cry in your bed all day, or you need a day off because you desperately need a manicure or a pedicure, or if you need a day off because you put off all your doctor's appointments and you need to go see the dentist and the gynecologist and the this and the that and the other thing, that's your prerogative. As an employee, you are entitled to days off. Those days off are yours. Your reason for taking days off or vacation, what you do with that time or vacation is entirely up to you. So personally, I would just say, hey, I need Friday off. I need Friday off. I have a couple of things to do. I'll be available or you won't be available. Be clear on that. If you're going to take the day off, try to take a day off. I tried to take a vacation last week. That did not go well. Thank you very much to people at Barstool Sports. But if you need a mental health day, I often need a mental health day. If you feel comfortable being like, hey, I need a mental health day and leaving it at that, great. Say you need a mental health day. But really what I would say is, you know, when you need a break. And if you need a break, don't be afraid to ask for a break. Don't feel that you have to share why you need a break. In terms of from an employer perspective and what we can do to more systematically encourage mental health days or promote mental health days or accommodate mental health days, one is, again, I don't really want to be in the business of managing who needs a mental health day versus just a day off versus a vacation. I feel like people who work at Barstool anyways are for the most part adults, and they should be able to manage when they need time off, what they need that time off for. I think it's also important to be a grown-up in asking for time off. Don't take a day off and don't tell your manager. I also feel that managers can be really thoughtful in encouraging mental health days or encouraging days off by just keeping an eye on your employee. If someone seems really down, if someone seems really stressed, if someone seems really frazzled, if someone has just finished a massive project, encourage them proactively to take a day off. A more rested, a more whole, a more centered employee is a better employee. And so from a company perspective or a manager perspective, just be attuned to how your people are feeling and be proactive about encouraging for them the things that they need to not only be great at work, but to be great at life. Second question, as a manager in a remote environment, how do you identify early signs of burnout or mental distress in employees? And how do you balance being empathetic while still getting the job done? This can be tough. I remember I worked for Microsoft and I managed a team. Some of them were in New York, some were in Seattle. I was in Boston. One guy was in Tokyo. There was a couple of people in London. And it was probably the start of a lot of really bad habits for me because I just worked 24/7 because it was, you know, everybody was on a different time zone. But if you're managing people remotely, I think it's really hard to expect that on your Zoom one-on-one every week or every 2 weeks, that someone's going to be equipped and ready and prepared to like spill their heart out about how they're feeling. I always preferred to use, now I would Slack, or you could use any type of chat functionality. Maybe your company has a chat, or to use text message if your employee if your company is text message friendly and if your employee is receptive to that. I think the way that you can identify burnout is, one, you just got to pay attention to how somebody shows up to things. You have to ask them how they're doing. How are you feeling? How's it going? Are you getting a break? I had a one-on-one with Jay Snowden this week, and I could tell Jay's like, how you doing? I'm like, oh, we're getting like the mental health check part of our conversation, but that's great. That's Jay's job, and I'm happy to share. So I think the biggest thing in terms of being a manager, whether you're in a remote environment, frankly, or you're in the office together, is just pay attention to the cues. If you're remote, maybe they don't happen face-to-face, but they could be shared over text message. They can be shared over email. You can understand it or get it in a phone call or on a Zoom. And if you're worried about your employees, be honest about it. Hey, I'm worried about you. How are you doing? Is there anything I can do to help you? And then the other piece of it is, yes, you always want to be empathetic, but at the end of the day, you're at work to do work. And so what I try to do, and I'm not always the best at it, probably very often not the best at it, is I always try to understand where someone is coming from. And I always try to accommodate that. And then I also want to be really clear about what the expectations are. And for the most part, the expectations don't change. Third question is, how do you find balance between pushing someone to do their job and giving them space for mental health practices? Here's my take on this one. You should always push people to not just do their job, to excel at their job. If you have to push someone to do their day-to-day job, that person sucks and they shouldn't be part of your team. I do think it's an incredible thing to push someone to be at their best and to help push the company forward. I push all the time. I think it's great to push. I think when you push, you got to take your foot off the gas after a little bit. You need to be able to balance the two. It's great to push hard. If you're going to push really hard, you need to give a moment of a break. One, you've got to give the person the chance to meet the expectation and to do the thing. And then second of all, not everybody can go hard 24/7. So I think it's important always to push, not just to do the day-to-day job, but to really make something incredible happen. And then I also think it's important to have moments where you're just like fuck around or you're casual or you're just, you know, goofy. I think that's super appropriate. I also think that everybody has a different mental health practice. You know, I'm in my 40s. I would never say the phrase mental health practice. I bet 20 somethings at Barstool Sports say the phrase mental health practice all the time. I think the biggest thing is to encourage anybody who's part of your team to be able to go hard and then also to give them the break and the space to be able to live their life and create their own best practices. I'm going to interrupt really quick to give a quick shout out to Roback. I have been working out, if you really call it that, in Roback tees. I love them. I love the little stripe on the back. I love the brand. I talked to their founders. It's a founder-run company. I'm pretty sure it's a husband and wife. They're awesome. What's great about Roback is they have the softest, stretchiest clothes out there. They've got women's gear rolling out this fall. Their performance polos are amazing. You can find all the guys and girls at the Classic wearing them. You can find me running in them. I love their performance quarter zips. Essentially, everything is so soft. It's performance fabric. It's super well made. The brand is cool. The logo is the dog. Nothing is better than Roback. If you use code TOKEN on roback.com, that's roback.com, you can get 20% off your first order. I'm telling you, the running t-shirts are awesome. They're also a little bit cropped, so they're slightly sexy, which is amazing. That's roback.com, 20% off all polos, quarter zips, and hoodies if you use code TOKEN. So next up, we have Chaps. This is one of my favorite people at Barstool. Chaps, you've been here how long?
5 years. I think I got here like 2 weeks after you.
5 years at the beginning. I remember when we hired you, Chaps, I was in my bed. It was late at night. And Dave's like, we got to hire this guy. And then you were like, I can't tell you my real name. And the Chaps introduction saga. What you've brought to us, our very own Purple Heart, and you are all heart. You've just really been incredible. So Chaps, for anyone who doesn't know, is the host of Zero Blog 30. He is a former Marine. Zero Blog 30 is our military podcast, which he hosts with Kate and Captain Cons. He also is a frequent guest slash co-host on Podfathers. He does tool time. You are inventing stuff every minute of every day. One of my favorite bloggers. Also the reason we got fired from ESPN, which nobody talks about. But this conversation is a little bit more personal in nature. And I struggle with this, Chaps, in terms of my own life. Is like, how much is public? How much is private? One of the strange things about Barstool is just how public your personal life becomes. Mm-hmm. And you've obviously been handling a lot. You talked about it on Podfathers with Big Cat and Clem last week and Large, but I just wanted to give, I really have so much respect for you as a person. And I think you and I have one of those relationships where we just kind of check with one another all the time on how we're doing mm-hmm. overall. And I really respect you as a parent, as a partner, as a personality, and just really wanted people to benefit from your story, what's happening with your family, and shed a little light on how people can help one another and help the community with people who are transitioning. So I'm going to give you the floor.
Okay. I'm not really sure which angle you want me to go here, but so I'll talk about kind of the new stuff. And really my entire life, my adult life has been shaped by sort of who my father wasn't to me. I wanted to be a good Marine. He was in the Navy. Anything that he did, I wanted to view, I was doing it bigger and better. So he's a Navy guy. I wanted to join the Marine. He never saw combat. I went. I wanted to do all those things. But the biggest part was being a good dad. For me, being a good dad is something that I've wanted to do my entire life. I remember being a young boy in middle school and thinking about how I would raise my family and the things that I wanted to do. And recently, my father passed away about a week and a half ago, now 2 weeks ago. And it's really doubled those efforts for me on being a good dad. And in that, about a year and a half ago, my youngest kid, McCartney, who is the star, I would say, of Podfathers, way more than me, Larger Clem. McCartney is the star of Podfathers and basically the backbone of that show for a long time. McCartney told us about a year and a half ago that they were non-binary. And obviously it didn't just happen that way. We were watching a show and they heard the term, asked me and their mom what that meant, and we kind of explained it, and they took it and thought about it for like 2 days, and we were riding in the car and they're like, Mom,
and how old, Chaps?
Six at this point. They're like, Mom, Dad, that's what I am. When we talked about that's what I am. And there's those moments in life where for me, I equate it to like a sickness, you know, like for me it was if you're struggling to breathe constantly and you're telling people I can't breathe, and you go to the doctor and they say, oh, you can't breathe because you have asthma. It's almost like a relief knowing that there's a name for something that you're going through and you're not the only person. I think that's what was going on in McCartney's brain. Like, I don't fit in the typical girl or boy box, and we saw that all over the place. And I use the example of McDonald's and like Happy Meals when you go through the drive-through and they ask you, do you want a boy toy or a girl toy? McCartney hated answering that question, even from like 2 or 3 years old. They wanted the boy toy, but they're not a boy. They didn't want to say that. And they also didn't want the girl toys, but they didn't want to say that either. So this realization that there was a term for somebody like them that was feeling like them was a freeing moment for McCartney. And it was a freeing moment for me and my wife, Annalise, where we were like, okay, now we can move forward. And I was just talking about it with Pat on Out and About. It wasn't smooth. Like, it wasn't, for me, it wasn't like, they say it, I have all the answers, I'm totally on board, I'm like all about it. It was a struggle for me because I looked at it not because of like the title of non-binary. I looked at it from a parent's perspective. I don't want my child to be bullied in any way. And I live in Texas, which can be known to be a pretty conservative state. I wondered what my child was going to go through. Are they going to be bullied more? And then we had conversations with McCartney. It's like, I want to get a mohawk. I want to do this. I want to do that. And I'm thinking, oh my God, my child is going to get bullied senseless. And so you're terrified for your kids. But ultimately, we had this conversation. I was telling Pat earlier today that I really think the litmus test for me and really the turning point was we were talking about cutting McCartney's hair shorter because they wanted to have shorter hair. And I said, I told my wife, I was like, this is going to be shocking to the other kids in their class. Like, it's going to open up all kinds of questions. And she looked at me and she's like, Matthew, you just got to love them. And it changed everything from my perspective about McCartney, about this whole thing. And I just pictured myself as a little boy, like looking at my dad and thinking, why don't you love me for who I am? And I never wanted my kids to feel that way ever. So I doubled down my efforts. I'm like, okay, I'm all in. I'm going to be trans dad. Like I'm ready to fucking
trans dad. Here we go.
Yeah. And I called you pretty soon after because Podfathers was obviously a big part of what I do. And I am very open. I would say I'm probably the most open blogger at Barstool about family and letting people in. And a lot of that is because I feel a responsibility. Like I've been through a lot. I've seen a lot of things. And I feel like my journey in life really coincides with a lot of other people's journeys. And if they can pick up something that I learned along the way that helped me, then I feel like I have an obligation to do that.
Yeah. One of the things I love the most about you is your bloom where you're planted, right? When I think about an inspirational phrase from you, I feel you say that often, which I think it was General Powell, right? You know, I think that what's been really inspiring about this process is, you know, there was a minute where you didn't want to talk about it, where you're like, I'm not ready. We've got a lot going on. It's a little bit touch and go. I give McCartney incredible credit to be a person at that age to be so sure about, I don't feel this and I don't feel that and I don't want to be put in a box. Like, that's incredible maturity. And I think you're right, which is when something's not right for you and you can't breathe or you feel off, it's like, you know it and it eats at you every day. And I think as a parent, what you want is your kid to be well. Mm-hmm. And who cares, who cares what well is, if well's long-haired or short-haired or as a boy or as a girl, like you really don't care. You want the spirit and the soul that your heart's running out in the world. You want them to be well. I thought, you know, from your conversation on Podfathers, I thought the most heartbreaking, incredible thing that you talked about was how dangerous the phrase, we'll love you no matter what. Mm-hmm. And that really stuck with me. So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. And this is something that I picked up from another parent that was dealing with the same type of thing. And I heard it and it was like brain shattering, because you hear parents constantly say this phrase. And typically it's around a phrase about something that's not socially acceptable, quote unquote. You hear it a lot from the LGBTQ community where they come out and then the parent will say, hey, you're my kid. I'm going to love you no matter what. In my estimation, and the way that was phrased for me, that no matter what automatically makes whatever you told them a negative. Like if you say, I love you no matter what, typically that doesn't come after you do something really good. Like if you go out and you win the Super Bowl, Tom Brady's parents aren't coming to the middle of the field. Tom, I love you no matter what. Like you don't say it in that moment. You say it in a negative moment. That's not something that's in my vocabulary anymore. Yep. I love McCartney for who they are. And who they are is not encapsulated by the pronouns that their proper pronouns, their personality, their heart, their soul, who they are as a person is what's important to me. And that hasn't changed. The only thing that changes is the way that I construct my sentences when I speak to them.
And was that hard? You know, one of the things that I think that, you know, I'm so glad this is happening. To be honest with you, I'm glad you're sharing your story. I'm so happy for McCartney. They've got a lot to work through. Mm-hmm. Was it hard not to trip, right? Like I'm tripping. Like, was it hard not to trip?
It was fucking A, man. It was like, I'm not a language guy. Like I have a brain injury, so I can't learn new things. I failed Russian 3 times, Spanish twice, and French once in college. So learning how to conjugate new verbs is difficult for me. And I messed up. So, and that I told you that was one of the biggest reasons why I wanted off of Podfathers. Because if I said stories, I didn't want to misgender
my so hard. Yeah.
It was difficult at the time. And still now, I will, if I'm talking really fast or if I'm trying to get something out really quick, I'll still mess up.
Yeah.
And the point I want to make to people that are nervous about this community, and that is one thing that really makes people nervous, is I don't want to talk about this because I don't want to make a mistake and I don't want to get canceled. I tell people to focus on the intent of what people are saying and not necessarily the impact. The impact that you have on somebody is certainly important, but I ask people to listen to my heart and what I'm trying to say and the intention. And if I make a mistake with McCartney, even though I'm their dad and this isn't something that ever happened to me, I apologize to my child for doing that. I'll say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say she. I didn't mean to say that. I apologize. McCartney says, no, it's okay, Dad. Let's go do whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think that respecting their personhood is very important.
Yeah, I think that's great. Because I do think it's so intimidating. It's the words get choked in your mouth because, you know, it's even in the acronym, right? Like I have to check myself on the acronym all the time. I'm so worried mm-hmm. that I'm going to fuck it up. And I do fuck it up mm-hmm. and everybody fucks it up. And the same with the pronouns. But what I really believe is that, you know, it's through human stories. It's the idea of McCartney mm-hmm. that is going to create more acceptance because they are a special person. They're mm-hmm. going to touch people. They're going to be wonderful. And it's less about this auto signature on your corporate email, right? Right. It's less about, ooh, I have 100% accuracy in the pronoun game. Now, eventually everyone will get to 100% accuracy because everything has been normalized, but I think we have so far to go. How do you think about your role and your platform in that?
I think it's tough because I do feel that responsibility, but I'm also a dumb motherfucker in a lot of ways. Like I'm still me. I still blog the same way. I still speak the same way. And then when I'm talking about this, it's almost like I have to put on a different hat. And I want it to become so natural, not only for me, but for the listener, where it's not even something that's talked about, really. Like, that's ultimately the goal for me, is that my kid and people like that, that community is just totally normalized, because it really is a normal thing. And the biggest aspect for me is trying to wrap my head around they, them. I was like, that doesn't make sense to me because it's plural. Like, you typically think of they, them as plural. But I was reading a book and it said, think about if somebody comes to your door and they said, there's somebody at the door. Who is it? I don't know. We'll let them in. You say, let them in. You know, it's just one person, but you'd still say, let them in because the gender isn't specified. That's the same thing as they, them for McCartney. It is a singular noun. Even in Webster's dictionary, it's a singular noun. But we in the American culture have constantly used it as a singular noun. And that's something that needs to change. And I also look at, you talk about like in the email signature where it says like he, him, and she, they, them, and all like the different pronouns. I used to look at that and fucking cringe. I was like, what does this mean? What is it? What is this even about? Because I had, as a white dude from the South, it's not something that ever went into my brain. Like I never had to think about it. I was born this way. My body and my brain matched up with what the culture said. And then I met somebody that used something different. And I thought, how ostracizing it is for people to assume something about you and then you have to correct them. And now I see the benefit of being an example and saying, these are my pronouns. What are yours? And I do that with when we go to like the doctor or something like that, in order to take the onus off of McCartney and not make them feel uncomfortable.
You're like, chaps, he, him.
Right. I go, I'm McCartney's dad. I use he, him, and this is McCartney. They use they, them.
That's great.
And then people are like, okay.
Great. It's normal. Chaps, in the last couple seconds with you, what are the biggest lessons that you've learned that you would share to someone else? And what are you most hopeful for?
The biggest lesson that I've learned is that I have a lot to learn and that I've always viewed myself as a pretty accepting person, but I want to be like that beacon on a hill of where people look at, you can be ignorant and then you can learn and then not be as ignorant and try to help people out. And kindness, I mention this all the time. To me, my life view is kindness. I think kindness goes a long way. And if people do make mistakes, correcting them with kindness or like educating them with kindness, I think goes a long way. And also blooming where you're planted. And to touch on that, that is like the mantra of my life. And there's been difficult things, whether it's a divorce, getting shot, having parents like I did, growing up the way that I did. I think blooming where you're planted is so important because we can't control the position that we're in oftentimes in life. However, whatever road you end up on is something that you can definitely control. And you have got to be the best person that you could possibly be in the environment that you are. And if you do that, you'll make a big impact for everybody that touches you.
Great. Chaps, thank you so much for joining us. Give a huge hug to McCartney. And we just appreciate you. And let us know if there's anything we can do to support you.
All right. Thanks, Erica. Appreciate it.
Okay. Bye. All right. High Noon. So before we get into adulting, let's give a quick shout out to High Noon. Hard seltzer, as everyone knows, real vodka, real juice and sparkling water, 100 calories, gluten-free, no added sugar, delicious 8-packs, delicious 4-packs available. They also have a limited edition tropical 8-pack to get you through Labor Day and the end of summer. My favorite flavor is peach. So shout out High Noon. Our adulting segment today, how do you prepare for a group interview? What's your tips on crushing them? Group interviews are the worst. It's so intimidating. You feel like you're essentially like standing naked for everybody to look at you. And then you're having to dance and perform in rapid fire while they probably like group chat about you while you can't see them. So it's tough to do a group interview. It can be intimidating. As always, my advice is to just be yourself, be confident. Know what you're talking about, be succinct, write down the names of the people who you are talking to or hover over their Zoom name. So you call them by their names. I think that always goes a long way. You don't have to do it all the time. You should do it sometimes. And then in terms of a group interview, the best thing you can do is to know who the group is, to have a sense of what their questions are going to be or what their bias might be for you or against you and what their hot buttons are. And then just be charming and winning and you'll crush the interview. That's it for today's episode. Huge thank you to Kate. Here's huge thank you to Chaps and to everyone who wrote in a mental health question in our Facebook group. If you haven't already subscribed to the podcast, we're answering voicemails for next week's episode. So call us at 440-462-1729. You can join our Token CEO Facebook group. You can watch this on YouTube or follow us at EKA Nardini or Token CEO on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, and YouTube. And we'll see you Thursday.